So I'd like to begin this morning with the offering of the investigation around metta, or loving kindness. So far, on Friday, I started with patience, which I heard that you would be able to access on some podcast that's happening later if you didn't hear that. And then yesterday, I went through harmonious living or morality, sila. And then in the afternoon, I talked about truthfulness or satcha as the others of the paramis. This morning, metta, and this afternoon, equanimity will complete 5 of the 10 paramis. And as I had mentioned, Stephen Armstrong, when he comes in March, he'll complete the other 5. These are all seeds of potential within our hearts and in our minds. They're waiting to be nourished, as the paramis have been described by the ancient teachings. They're the kind of the winds of grace that carry us through our lives, through the ups and downs of life, to the other shore, to the place that maybe we can't even imagine right now, the place of deep, abiding, unconditional peace. There's a Native American saying that I often will go to in my mind when I'm not feeling so strong or confident about these qualities that are developing in my own heart. Sometimes I go about pitying myself. It's how it goes, this Native American saying. Sometimes I go about pitying myself when all the while I am being carried by a great wind across the sky. These are the winds of grace, the winds of these paramis that are present within us and among us. And it's just a matter of practicing them, of being able to feel their aliveness within us. Really important. Metta is the first member of a group of practices called the 4 Brahma Viharas. So I wanted to give you the context that they're within, not just in the paramis, but they're within the practices called the 4 Brahma Viharas. Brahma means divine. Vihara, vihara means abode. So Brahma Vihara means divine abode. And there's much more to say about this, but I want to just come down to the very basic feeling, the very basic experience of them, in that these divine abodes, particularly metta, which is the base one, is that abiding place in our hearts. Not someplace outside of ourselves, but they're that abiding place within our hearts which we can attune to more and more in our daily life, in our living. So metta, or loving kindness, is the first of the 4. And then the others are compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. It's said that loving kindness is the basis of all the others. And we can see this quite easily when loving kindness is another way to express or feel loving kindness is this deep feeling of goodwill. When it is facing suffering, that feeling of goodwill turns into more precisely a feeling of compassion. When goodwill turns to suffering, that sense of compassion arises in the heart. When goodwill turns towards joy, that sense of sympathetic joy comes to the heart. It's more of a specific feeling. When it turns or opens to both the suffering and the joy in the world, all the ups and downs that we face, it has a sense or a feeling sense of equanimity, that spacious, calm, really open abiding of the heart that's able to open to both and all the sufferings and the joy of the world with a deep sense of balance, meaning non-reactivity to what's going on, just understanding that this is the way it is in the world. There's suffering, there's joy, there's neutrality, there's just all these ups and downs. And there's an ability of the mind to be non-reactive to it with a sense of deep goodwill, not with a kind of distance to it all, but with a feeling of, it's how it is, and I still can have goodwill for all of it. So more about equanimity later. It's really important to believe in our potential to do the practice, to really develop and exhibit goodwill in our lives. Because when we can actually believe in it, then we'll practice it, and we can make it the default setting, the place where we can go to automatically. It can be the appropriate behavior. One of our teachers, Ayakema, started to call it the divine emotions. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. They're all emotional qualities. They're wholesome qualities that when we face any part of life with this basis of goodwill that faces suffering without cruelty or pushing it away, that faces joy without jealousy or envy or comparing mind, that faces all the ups and downs of life with an open, balanced heart of goodwill. These are appropriate responses. They're divine emotions. They work in all of those cases. What our teachers have been saying is that we don't need anger. We don't need comparing mind in an unwholesome way to get us through this life. We don't need to close down when there's a lot of joy and sorrow and we just don't know how to take it all. We can keep the mind opened and balanced with goodwill. It's important to train our minds to go there. It just doesn't come automatically. It really struck me when I was listening to a talk by Achan Tanisaro of Southern California. And he was saying something that might be new or shocking to you. And he says, the Buddha never talked about Buddha nature. That was kind of new to me, you know, because we always hear about Buddha nature. What the Buddha talked about was developing a mind that would go towards the wholesome qualities and relinquishing the unwholesome qualities that arise, that we have to develop this, that we have to make it be really part and alive in our lives. It's not something, as Manindra would say, you can't just sit under the mango tree and wait for the mangoes to fall in your lap or in your hands. You really have to fertilize that tree and to expose it to the natural elements of sunshine and rain and even wind, you know, that the wind makes trees strong. Many of you may have heard this story already, this Native American Indian story about a young boy with his elder grandmother during a time of great hardship. And he faced his grandmother and he said, Grandmother, it seems I have two wolves inside of me. One that is angry and vengeful, impatient and jealous and fearful. And sometimes the other wolf shows up. It's loving and compassionate, patient and understanding. There's a lot of endurance and clarity with that wolf, courageous. And he asked his grandmother, which one will win, O grandmother? They seem to be fighting each other sometimes. Which one will win? And the grandmother answered, "The one you feed, the one you feed, the one you give nourishment to." When I heard this story many, many years ago, I really examined, what am I giving nourishment to through habit patterns, through just not thinking and acting or saying what comes because it's easily accessible and not really that wholesome, but it just comes out of my mouth. It comes out of my actions. It comes through the way my hands go through the air in ways that maybe aren't hurting in a direct way someone, but just by the way I'm expressing myself could be very hurtful. The way I may slam a door or walk off and ignore someone briskly in my actions. So what am I feeding in my life? Many years ago I began to honestly start examining that and see whether I could turn the mind to another, in another direction, to start feeding those seeds that are already there of loving kindness or goodwill, of compassion. When I see the joy in another, can I say, "That's really good, may it continue, I'm happy for you," instead of maybe feeling in my mind that you don't deserve it, or why are you having it and not me? You know, all those thoughts that come up quite automatically because I haven't been aware of them so much, and I haven't really recognized with wisdom that this is unwholesome. This doesn't lead to happiness. One of our teachers, Utejaniya, has brought out the point very clearly that you can't just have mindfulness. You have to have wisdom with it too, in order to get to the other shore, in order to really understand what is it that turns the mind and that gets the mind to being happy, to being peaceful. It's not just being present with the present moment's experience and knowing, oh, this is aversion, and knowing the moment of aversion. We have to add to that the understanding, the wisdom that says, this doesn't lead to the end of suffering. And then when we see metta, or compassion, in the mind, it's the realization, along with mindfulness, that this leads to the end of suffering. This is the basis for liberation. So it's really important to know which one will win. Which one will win this game of life, if you want to put it in those terms. So the divine emotions and metta, loving kindness, is the major, the basis of all the others. The word metta, which many of us are so familiar with already, how many of you don't know the basis of metta, where that word comes from? So I'm speaking to, you don't know, okay. So I'm going to give a fullness of the understanding of metta as much as I can during this time period. Most of us are familiar with that word. We translate it as loving kindness. We do metta meditation, also we call it loving kindness meditation. It comes from the ancient language of Pali. Metta comes from the Pali language. This is the language that the Buddhist teachings were originally recorded in, also recorded through the language of Sanskrit and other Chinese languages as well. The root of the word metta, the root word comes from words that mean gentle and friend. In fact, in Sanskrit, the word metta is maitri, or sometimes I hear the word mitra. It's so, to me, it's kind of coincidental that I had the last name of Mitra for a long, long time. It was my first married name. And so Mitra means friend. I like to investigate that, because when we think of the word metta, it's really a feeling of friendship that we have when we investigate that actual feeling inside of us. We feel friendly in our connection with others. And we can feel friendly with ourselves too. But a lot of the times I hear from people that offering metta to oneself or feeling friendly towards oneself is one of the hardest things to do. In the practice of loving kindness, oneself comes as the first of the five individuals that we offer loving kindness to. And I hear often that people can't start there. We have to start with the benefactor, or the person that we can mostly open our hearts to, or firstly, primarily open our hearts to. And I wonder if any of you would be so kind as to offer, honestly, how many of you find it difficult to start with oneself in the practice of metta? Yeah, so there's quite a number of us who feel that way. And in the Buddha's teaching, he said that in order to be able to offer metta to others, it's really helpful to be able to offer metta to oneself, because that's where the metta comes from. It comes from our own hearts, our own minds. Heart and mind in the Dhamma is the same thing. So when I say heart, I mean mind, and vice versa. Some of us can be so honest as to say that I'm actually not as friendly with myself as I am with other people. And so to do the practice of metta is of great value to those of us who feel that way. That we really, it's really important for us, very valuable for us to feel that sense of loving kindness towards ourselves. The word that I like the most that exemplifies the actuality of metta in my life is goodwill. Goodwill. Because sometimes loving kindness can be too high of a bar for us. Love and even kindness. But goodwill, that can be pretty middle path. Especially when I heard once someone say, not ill will, goodwill. And when I saw how many times the feeling of ill will would come up in relationship to myself or to another person or another group of persons, I realized that, yeah, what I would like to do is to develop goodwill, not ill will, toward the opposite of ill will, goodwill towards myself, towards others. In my own growing up in the Dharma, I have to be honest that there's been so many times when I felt like I wasn't good enough, that I had ill will towards my own beingness in life, that I would feel a sense of deprecation, blaming myself, feeling guilty. All senses, all exhibitions of ill will towards myself. And so developing goodwill became really, really important. I like the word goodwill because sometimes we can feel that more readily than love, for example. Sometimes, and a lot of times, I don't feel like love for a person, but I do feel goodwill for someone else, or for a group of people, or for insects or animals. I can feel goodwill, a willingness to offer a sense of myself that's good in front of them or in connection with them. So this is friendship. This can be a sense of friendliness, of friendship. I like the word gentle also, because the opposite of gentle is harsh. And when I feel ill will, there is a sense of harshness that goes on. So all of this in terms of really examining what goes on in your heart. Don't take these words and these descriptions or maybe these little stories about myself as just theory. Examine it in your own heart. Take it in and see, how is it for you? Is there harshness in your heart? Is there that, you know, Wolf, as a young boy, says, is it gentleness that goes on? When we're in front of someone and we're wondering, how do I really feel about this person? How am I really connecting with this person in my heart? Is it with gentleness? Is it with goodwill? Is there a connection? You know, sometimes we feel that harshness is kind of holding back, closed down, disconnection. Goodwill has a kind of a connecting quality. So just for a moment, we're not going to do metta practice right now, but we're going to examine what goes on in our own hearts. Just for a moment, see if you can just close your eyes or have them down to the ground if that feels more safe for you. And bring up the first person that you want to have some investigation with in terms of what's going on in my heart in relationship to this person. Somebody that you have interest in examining that relationship. And it may be yourself with yourself. So let's start out with a guideline that whatever comes up is okay. This is just kind of research. It's a kind of a scientific research that whatever comes up, we're going to be interested in knowing what's going on without criticizing oneself or the other person, without comparing that, you know, I'm better or worse than a time before or another person I'm thinking about. Just with the happiness of knowing, oh, this is so, this is how it is. So bring up that person and just have a sense of when you were with that person. Remember when you were with that person, a most predominant time, clear time. And maybe it's just remembering or having a sense of that person in front of you now. And notice how it is in your heart in relationship with that person. How does it feel? I'm going to give you a few clues. Does it feel gentle or harsh? Relaxed and soft? Or stiff and pulled back? Connecting or disconnecting? Feelings of goodwill or ill will? Okay, so take a few moments and examine that. Judging oneself, being okay. Okay, thank you for that. Maybe you needed more time too. It would be good to just sit with that the whole time and do metta maybe. How many of you could notice what's going on in relationship to that person? Okay. So how many of you would you be willing to let us know? Was it yourself? It just helps me to know. Okay, your relationship with oneself. And how many of you could sense the goodwill and the softness, the gentleness? I know it can be both. So you can raise your hands both times. So how many of you sense the goodwill, the metta that was there? Okay. And how many of you could sense the opposites of metta, ill will and closed down, disconnected? And how many of you with the same person sensed both? Yeah. So it just brings all those possibilities out. So between ill will and goodwill, what would you choose? I mean, duh. Do I even have to ask? We know what we would choose. But there's one thing that I found out in my own investigation of this. Years ago, and I continue to find out, is a lot of times I'm not really choosing. It's just going to what the habit is. And with particular situations and particular individuals, not all, with some individuals I'm able to make a choice. But with some situations and some individuals, I don't make the choice, really. It goes to what the habit is. And the habit isn't necessarily wholesome. It goes towards the unwholesome. So this is the place that we really want to bring up and say, this is where I really want to take the reins as much as we can. I mean, we don't have complete control, but we have powerful influence over our minds. And we can make the choice. A lot of times I would think, well, I'm choosing loving kindness, but I really don't. I just let it go to what the default setting is. When we really take that in and understand that with wisdom, it gives us the impetus. The knowledge of that gives us the impetus. It gives us a stronger determination, which is one of the paramis. It gives us the gentle, persevering effort to turn the mind towards the wholesome, which is what all these paramis are, to incline the mind there, to use the energy that we have as human beings to do that, and not to just be complacent with how it is, to just let it fall, think that it's going to come naturally. Yes, we can have Buddha nature through effort, through wisdom, through turning the mind in that direction. So gentleness, friendship, goodwill, benevolence, fellowship. What are other words that you translate into metta? What are words that help you? Is there anything else? Offer. I mean, I use this for Dharma talks, whatever comes from you.
Befriending.
Befriending. Mm-hmm. Comes from the friendliness thing. But befriending is more of a verb. So that's action. That's really great, befriending. What else?
Affection.
And we might add that it's affection without attachment, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really good. Any other thoughts? Experiences? I said the word connecting. Connecting. It's not just friendliness, but really connecting with friendliness. And I realize I could use that too, in my own practice. Because that is a verb also. It's action. It may be within our minds, but don't you feel sometimes when you're with someone or you're just having that person come up in your own meditation like we did just a few minutes ago, that we're not connecting. It's like, I don't want to think about you. You know, I have nicer things to do. But it takes that energy to really connect. So it's nice, it's good to use these words that are verbs. Yeah. Gentleness, yeah. Gentleness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Along the same lines of connecting, relating.
Relating. Very good. That's actually a little more descriptive. There's a little more depth to that, isn't there? That's right. That's right. Yeah, relating. Mm-hmm. Another word that comes in the realm of wisdom, I'm just springboarding from what you're saying, is understanding. Mm-hmm. It's really, when I feel metta, genuine metta, it's wider than that. It's bigger than that. It's more depthful. I'm understanding that person a little more. Yeah.
For me, when I start trying to be thoughtful or kind to another, it resonates with the opposite. And I just went through this whole opposite. And so it's accepting the fact that it's really unpleasant. The emotions and feelings aren't happy, joyous, and free. It's just real grim. Mm-hmm. Accepting that, yeah, I love that too.
That's metta also.
Right. Back to that.
Yeah. That's a good thing to bring up. And I do want to point out first before I go into the other, the opposite part that you were saying is accepting is a good word. Accepting is a good word. And in your case, you were accepting the feelings that aren't so pleasant that were coming up as you were going through it. This is a really important part of doing the metta practice. It is accepting the unpleasant experiences that come up as we do the metta. Yeah. And a lot of times people can't even go there to do metta because this is what stops them. The inability to accept the unpleasant experiences that come up in even embarking on the journey to do metta practice. There have been so many times, and I do understand when people, you know, we offer metta in the afternoon usually in retreats, and people don't come sometimes to the metta because it's so hard. It's really so hard to look at that, to open to that part of oneself. But this is that an important step is accepting those feelings that are yucky, as you say.
And for me, the miracle, if you will, of doing metta is phenomenal in that it works. Even though it seems ridiculous, it works.
It still works.
I can sit with some really awful stuff. Mm-hmm. Initially, several years ago, I wouldn't even.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. It takes all those paramis, not just to become a Buddha, but to do metta. It takes all those paramis, you know, giving to oneself, living in harmony with another oneself, letting go, just seeing those difficult experiences come, letting them go also. Resolution, being truthful with how it is. Just to do metta practice, you can see that all of those paramis have to come into play. Right. Yeah.
Gratitude.
Yeah. Gratitude is one of the near friends of metta. Yeah. That's a good one. Yes.
Openness and spaciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I might say that this, and I'll get to this afternoon, these are qualities of equanimity. And it said that really without equanimity, we wouldn't be able to do the metta practice. Equanimity is a strong ally. We wouldn't be able to open to the difficult places. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good. Chris?
For me, it's spaciousness and the acceptance, but it's really the allowing.
Allowing. Yeah.
Yes.
That's another equanimity example is and allowing and also is a great ally. So those are great words, and I like that we're going into the verbing of it, you know, the actual mental heart action of it. Yes. Faith and trust.
There is a source, there is the universe, there is
the
source that we can trust and that we can have faith
that mm-hmm.
for that part,
yeah.
Dies,
yeah.
Faith and trust that
sure. Yeah. Faith, trusting. I remember my colleague saying faith is a verb, you know, it's faithing. Yeah. Very good. There was one more back here, yeah?
I have a phrase that I use. It's giving the benefit of the doubt.
Giving the benefit of the doubt, yeah. So that generosity, yeah. And one more. Bonnie, did you have something?
Well, I've been feeling a lot of the combination of tenderness and preciousness.
Tenderness and preciousness, yeah. So we're getting more into a kind of the deeper feelings of metta, tenderness, preciousness, and sometimes it's not so just an open-hearted connection. It's even deeper than that. Tenderness, preciousness, cherishing somehow without attachment, cherishing, honoring, some of these deeper values that we come to realize. Anything else in that realm? That's a good thing to go into.
I'm just having this feeling that my positive feelings of metta are shallow unless I can acknowledge the bad feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So unless I can really deal with the difficult aspect, then I feel like I'm just covering it up with...
Right, yeah. So the comment is, unless one can deal with, she can deal with the difficult aspect, and giving voice to that, giving truth to that, unless you can do that, then your metta feels shallow. Yeah. That's true, because we really want to open to it all and allow the truth of everything to be known, and yet still have a feeling of goodwill. Still come away with it with, okay, this is here, and still I can feel this goodwill in my heart. Yeah.
And then I can feel the goodwill in my heart.
And then you can feel, okay.
It was when she said tender and precious, and I realized I'm feeling the angst of this relationship and the love at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And if I weren't acknowledging the angst, the full... and the preciousness of love would be less.
Yeah, I'm getting it better now. Thank you. Yeah. One last one.
What helps me a lot is non-separateness.
Mm-hmm.
You're not separate from me. If I can remind myself of that,
mm-hmm.
the oneness.
Good. Yes.
I'm an hour in
it. Yeah.
You know, acting, you know, separate and you pull away and you feel, you know, right, you're wrong, and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go to the place of non-separateness,
mm-hmm.
I remind myself of the commonality and the oneness of the detail.
Mm-hmm. To remind yourself of the commonality.
And it takes time.
It does, yeah.
It's not that you've got to work on it.
One way that we can remind ourselves of the commonality in just in a phrase that we use is, you too want to be happy. You know, just as I wish to be happy, so you too wish to be happy. And so that's a very general commonality that we have. And it's one of the things that the Buddha suggested to include in our understanding. And that makes the connection. Mm-hmm. Sometimes metta is described as the generosity of the heart. The generosity of the heart. It's a giving. It's a giving of our goodwill. And true generosity doesn't give without expecting something in return. So I like to think of metta, when we do the metta practice, as an offering. We're offering our goodwill. And it doesn't mean that we're waiting for them to acknowledge it or to say, oh, you're a good person because you offered it, or to give us something back or to change because we're, you know, may you be happy, like may you please be happy so I can be peaceful. That kind of, you want something back from them because you're, you know, trying to surround them with loving kindness so you'll be peaceful. It has no connection with attachment at all. So it's this true generosity that has no attachment towards getting anything back, nor attachment to changing them or fixing them, or making things right in what you think is, happen to think is right in the world or the relationship. It doesn't have anything to do with attachment. It's a true generosity of the heart. So when we do the phrases, as we will, we're going to do a little practice of loving kindness. When we do those phrases, when we offer our phrases, can we offer them? It's sort of a question that we ask ourselves. Can we offer them with that true generosity in the depth of an offering without even asking for acknowledgement or wanting acknowledgement? So it may seem like a wish, but I like to put it more in the category of an offering, because a wish sort of implies that we want it to come true. Of course we do, is a wholesome wanting. But what if it doesn't? Are we going to be upset or happy or unhappy? So I like to think of it more as an offering, because when we truly offer something, we're offering our goodwill through all of these phrases. When we truly offer our goodwill, that's it. It's just goodwill. Sometimes if it helps, it helps me to look at it as a blessing. Have a good day. You know, when you meet somebody in the street, that's goodwill. When you say, have a good day. And I look at that as a little bit of a blessing. And when people say that to me, I really take it on as kind of a blessing. So not with any attachment that it will come true, not based in any self-interest. This is what metta is. Goodwill. Inclining towards that goodwill all the time. Even when we've acknowledged that it has gone towards ill will, we can acknowledge it with gentleness. And this is also metta. Acknowledge it with gentleness. And then with gentleness, incline towards goodwill. So inclining the mind and heart, that's our training here. We've brought up a lot of the near and far enemies of metta already, just in our discussion of it. The near enemy seems like metta because It can feel like metta sometimes when we have attachment to someone, when we cherish them so much that, you know, we don't want them to go away from us. They have to be near us all the time, or they have to be in a certain way. We're attached to having them in a certain way in order for us to be happy. Those are kinds of feelings that might go towards loving kindness, but when we really examine it, we see that there's some attachment there. So attachment is the near enemy of metta. When we think, oh, you know, may you be happy so that your life will be better. Well, of course, you know, that makes sense. But what if their life isn't better? Are we still going to love them? Can we still love them? Metta includes all of that, even if it doesn't go in that direction, that they continue to be unhappy or suffer or whatever, we can still love them. We can still have our hearts big enough so that it doesn't, we're not separate from them. We don't disconnect our love, our goodwill towards them. So the near enemy is attachment. It comes in many forms, as we've all talked about. And the far enemy, which we see more clearly, that's why it's called the far enemy, because you can see it from afar, are those manifestations of aversion and ill will. And all of the ways we've talked about just in our discussion here, and we might find out even more ways. Knowing when they're there, acknowledging them, as has been brought up, acknowledging them with gentleness is a way of practicing metta. So you're not out of the realm of doing metta practice even when those come up. You're still doing the metta practice. It said that the Buddha said that nothing in the world is left out or remains apart from the heart releasing loving kindness. Nothing in the world is left out nor remains apart from the heart releasing loving kindness. So in terms of what we were just talking about, it's our own inner habit patterns that come up. Can we include that in the releasing of loving kindness? And then as we go through the different individuals when we're doing the loving kindness practice, for example, the neutral person, people we can't connect with very much, and the difficult persons, people we usually have aversion or ill will or some form of it, can we include them as well?